I'm Sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, keto lovelies, and welcome to episode number 209, where I am joined by my good friend, Kim Howerton. I have been trying to find the right time to record this introduction because I've just got noise going on everywhere, and it seems that there's not going to be any right time, and it's now the evening on Friday, so I've just got to get on with it. There's noise outside, there's noise down below me from the floor guy, there's noise above me from the noisy neighbour, there's noise next to me with Bets snoring, so I've just got to get on with it. But I apologise if there is untoward background noise going on. So let's have a quick roundup of what's been going on with me this week. As I just mentioned, the floor guy has been here. He was here the first couple of days of the week, and he's here today. He wasn't here the last couple of days because I went along the coast to see my mother in Worthing, which was very nice. We were trying to figure out what the bit that sticks out is that we could both see. And it turns out that it's Beachy Head. So you might have seen some of the photos that I share in social media of the coast along towards Beachy Head and Eastbourne, which is to the west of me, while Worthing is on the other side. So when she looks back along towards me looking eastward, she sees Beachy Head from the other direction. And I think this is why it's a little bit more sheltered here. When it's windy, I've always thought of Worthing as being so windy. And when it's windy, it's that much more windy in Worthing than it is here. And I think that's why, because we have that bit of shelter with Beachy Head sticking right out like that. It sort of buffers us a little bit from the southwesterly winds. Don't get me wrong, it still gets very windy here and the waves get very choppy. Talking of which, it has been quite rough this week, but I have managed to get in a few times. I had a lovely sunrise swim, or swim rise, as I saw someone else refer to it the other day, which I thought was rather lovely. It was nice, actually. I got down and the moon was still out on one side and the sun was just coming up on the other. The water is definitely getting a fair bit chillier, though. I looked on some site or other and it said the temperature was still about 15 degrees, but I'm not entirely sure I believe that. It certainly feels a lot chillier, but maybe it's just because the air temperature is that bit colder. Starting to get a real bite to the air now, which makes getting my DIY stuff done all the more pressing because I've got lots of missing radiators that can't go back in until said DIY has been done. So I need to get on with it. But I can't get on with it until the floor's finished, but hopefully that will be finished this evening. He has worked his way almost all the way across the floor, so I don't think it's far off anyway, let's put it that way. But back to Worthing, I took my car over to have a couple of tyres replaced and also some electrical fault or other that's playing havoc with the parking sensors and other things going on. And they're hoping they can fix it with this one part that they were supposed to have, but they didn't have, which is very annoying. There seem to be hold-ups with deliveries of all kinds of things, and this is just one of those things that's been affected. It's not the end of the world. They did the tyres and they very kindly cleaned the car, both inside and out, which was a bit embarrassing because it was pretty filthy on the inside, covered in dog hair and DIY rubbish and sand and all sorts of things. So that was rather nice to get my car clean for me and two new back tyres. And I shall just have to go over again when they've got their part in, which is fine because I can combine it again with a trip to see my mum. We had a lovely time, went to a restaurant for lunch, which is her favourite, called the Crab Shack, which will come as no surprise, is a restaurant that specialises in seafood, and very delicious food it is too. We had a lovely lunch. The weather played nice, although it was very windy on the first day. That's quite good fun though, because as I said before, the wind is that much stronger at Worthing, so the sea was really quite dramatic. But we had lots of sunshine too. And my dogs are really getting used to her place now. She's got quite a nice big garden and they really like playing around and playing with her dogs. Well, one of them, Dottie the Whippet. Raymond is a very old Manchester Terrier and is a bit grumpy, and he just mostly keeps to himself. But Dottie had quite a good time running around with Rocket and Ams. Poor old Bets tends to get a little bit lost, and she had a bit of a senior moment where she was just stood looking at the wall in my mum's living room, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. She was just stood there looking at the wall. And I think what happened was that she thought it was a door and I was on the other side and she was patiently waiting for me to come back through. But gradually she's mapping out mum's house and garden so that she knows where everything is. And she's so good at that. I forget how little she can see because she's so good in environments that she knows you just don't realize. But it becomes very obvious when we're in a strange environment and she keeps bumping into things that I don't think she can see much of anything at all. Certainly not more than a foot or two in front of her. But she does remarkably well and she had a good time along with the rest of us. Ams is funny. As soon as she gets to my mum's, she goes round and she finds all the hoofs that her dogs have to chew on. She sort of rounds them all up and she loves them and spends most of the time she's there chewing on them. So I was determined to try and find her some. And I asked the lady at the place where I get their dog food, and she didn't have any, unfortunately. But just as I was about to pull away, she came out with two that she'd dug out from the back of a freezer, which she gave to me as a present. So my lot were very happy about that. They have been sharing. Rocket and Bets got them to start with. Ammy didn't actually want one, funnily enough. She was offered one to start with, but she didn't want it. And they're stuffed, these hooves, stuffed with tripe and things. So Bets had a go at one first and promptly threw most of it up later. So that was a bit of a waste and not particularly pleasant for me. But now Ams has got it and she's having a good old chew at it. So those are going to keep them amused for many weeks to come. I'd forgotten actually how much Ams in particular really enjoys bones. I must go and find her some beef ribs. That's what I used to give them in France, and they really liked those, and they lasted for a long, long time and didn't smell. That's the problem often. If you have dogs and you give them bones, you will know that they often end up getting really stinky, but certain bones don't seem to, and the hoofs aren't too bad, and for some reason beef ribs are fine as well. So that's my roundup. Back to this week's episode. As you will hear, I first heard Kim talking about this on her podcast, and she was having a conversation with Dr. Ken Berry, and he ended up turning the tables on her and interviewing her, and she shared her story about depression. And I found it so interesting and so relevant to my own story as well. We overlap, Kim and I, with lots of things to do with our physical and mental health. So personally, I found it very interesting, and I really thought that you would find it interesting too. And it's also, I think, a very important story to share, and you will soon find out why. Kim and I have known each other for quite a few years now, basically all the time I've been keto, so it must be, 4 or 5 years. She was an admin in the Two Keto Dudes group, and that's how we first got to know each other. And then we met up at Keto Fest, actually, and roomed together. And we shared a room several times since with our other mutual friend, Terry, who, of course, you know very well by now, as my wonderful Monday Mindset co-host. And the Mindset Matters episodes, which are turning out to be very, very popular. She is super busy at the moment, but I'm going to try and persuade her to come back very soon with another episode. But back to Kim. If you don't know Kim, you should know Kim. She's fantastic. She's a keto coach, a life coach. She has her own podcast, Keto Life Support, which is fabulous. If you haven't listened to it, you should check it out. And she also has a great Facebook group, again called Keto Life Support. And she does lives in there from time to time with Q&As and all sorts of things. She's great. I really like Kim a lot. And so I was really pleased when she agreed to come back onto my podcast and share her story. So I will stop rambling on and let you listen to said story. And I really hope you find it as interesting and useful as I did. I will see you back here afterwards. Welcome back, Kim, to the Keto Women Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Daisy?
Very good, thank you. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
We chat on the web waves, typing away, but I don't often get to see your face, so it's nice to see you.
Good to see you too.
So I've been getting a little bit carried away with my new themed episodes, and I don't know whether this is going to become a themed episode or not, but anyone who knows me and my history a bit knows that I suffer from periods of depression from time to time. It's also something that just interests me. And I heard you telling your story about depression on your podcast, talking to Dr. Ken Berry. And I thought this is a very important story to share, and I wanted to share it with my listeners.
All right.
So I asked you if you would come on.
Good deal. Yeah. You know, it's very hard for me to disentangle anything about myself from my depression story because it's been pretty much most of my life. So it's a very complex topic, and you know, I have a lot more thoughts than I have confirmed facts, as is often the case with these sorts of things. But you know, my first serious bout of depression was when I was 9 years old, so it's been a long time. And yeah, I don't want to cut to the end too fast, but you know, where do you want to start?
Well, yes, one of the reasons I found it so interesting was that there was so much overlap and similarities with my own story. I can remember certainly feeling miserable, for want of a better word, around that time. Some different things sort of hit me. There was a bit of a trifecta of things that happened, sort of 9, 10 years old. But yes, I can remember having those feelings from that time. And yeah, without giving the game away, when do we give the game away?
I don't know.
But different diagnoses came in at different times for us. But yes, I guess just carry on with the story as a depression story for now.
Sure, because I can go chronological and then we can
time,
go back.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so I was, you know, this was where I was like, oh, this is confusing for me as a child, because I had a pretty happy childhood. It wasn't, I should say, it was not very chaotic. I was very well cared for. I was in a, you know, there wasn't a lot of external chaos in my life as a child. But as far back as I can remember, I sort of had times when I didn't feel like what I thought was normal, but I don't know how we know what normal feels like. But I remember saying to my parents when I was like 6, you know, like, oh, it's great how the little kids play, you know. Like, I felt like I didn't feel like a kid, really. I felt like I'd already grown up, and I don't know what that is. It's just a personality thing. I don't know. But I feel like that's almost somehow related. Like, I had a different way of looking at the world. But it wasn't until I was 9 that I really was, like, having a problem. It was like a switch flipped in my brain. The only way I can describe it is like a tsunami. Like, it was this change where, you know, from 1 week to another, I just like felt different. And it was sort of this feeling like I was under a blanket of sadness that was like weighing me down. I was crying every day. Like, I could hold myself together through school. And then I would get home and I would just feel like overwhelmed by being alive. And I would cry pretty much every evening, every afternoon. I'd cry when I was going to bed. It was intense. And I remember thinking, there's not a reason I'm sad. If I knew the word hormonal at that point, I probably would have used it. It felt chemical. It felt not like, oh, my parents are getting a divorce, or, you know, it wasn't situationally based. And I didn't know how to stop it. I didn't know what to do. It was overwhelming and intense. And my parents put me in therapy because it was clear I was struggling and they wanted to help me. And I learned management strategies around it, but it was sort of there. And then it would ebb and flow for the rest of my young adulthood, these periods of feeling I would get a little better, a little worse. I was always really good at pulling it together. And I also have a fairly friendly, sunny disposition. And so I'm pretty sure the majority of people in my life who weren't close to me had no idea.
Mm. And you just learned to live with it then, basically.
I just learned to live with it. Yeah. And I always associate. So there's another step, which is the only thing that made me feel less hysterical, less like I was coming apart at my seams, was eating. That's when I started binge eating. Now, I always loved cookies and I always loved to eat. Like, I was always food focused. So it's not like there weren't tendrils before, but it makes sense why food was my go-to, because I liked it, right? It was an easy go-to and I knew food made me feel happy. I knew I liked cookies, you know, I knew those things. So if I was sad, I was like, eat. Mm. And it was a management strategy for my mood. And to some degree, it helped. I would eat something and I would at least be distracted from what I was thinking or feeling. And so that was sort of the start of, you know, what I would call binge eating. And then I gained weight, you know, and so I also, you know, like, and puberty hit at that point. So I don't know if I said this clearly, like I always, in hindsight, was like, oh, it was the onset of puberty must have been what set off this tsunami. So I was taller than everybody, I was bigger than everybody, and I was getting heavy at the same time. So it was all these things. Well, then once I started getting bigger and heavier and fitting in less, and I already kind of had a mentality that didn't fit in very well, then I began to think, oh, I'm depressed because I'm bigger and heavier and I don't fit in. And then I kind of started to focus that, oh, all my problems would be solved if I was thinner, but I can't stop this binge eating. But in reality, the depression hit before the binge eating, not the reverse. But you know, your brain wants to find an easy answer. And so my easy answer was, this is all because I don't like my body and I'm overweight and I'm out of step with my classmates and I look like I'm 10 years older than everybody.
I think it's a natural tendency with depression, isn't it? Or certainly I find it like this, is to try and find a reason.
Right.
Partly because other people ask you, well, why?
What's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong? Why are you feeling that way? Oh, let's do such and such to cheer you up, or, you know. And it almost feels worse when you feel like something really bad has happened, but it hasn't, and you just feel that way. So I think you're all right. I think you're always, your brain is always ticking over, trying to pin a reason on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I really struggled because, you know, if things are relatively good when you do an inventory, then it's worse. Yeah. Something's more wrong with me, right? Mm-hmm. And it's this endless spiral. So cutting to the chase, you know, I ended up going through, as I said, various states, doing fairly well at some times, doing not so well at other times. I went to college and did pretty well for the first 2 years. And then the third year, I hit a really bad depression again. And at that point, got diagnosed as bipolar because basically nothing was working. And because when I described this experience, that sometimes it was better and sometimes it was worse, they were like, well, okay, that sounds like bipolar. Right. And so
gotta have a label.
Right. The label will help. So I got put on meds. That was when I started taking various meds. And then for the next 2 years or so, I tried a bunch of different meds. Some of them made me gain more weight. My weight gain accelerated, but none of them made me feel better. And so eventually I was just like, I don't want to do meds. It might have been longer than 2 years, but I'm like, that was like 20 years ago. But, you know, I eventually was like, the meds don't help me. I'm not going to do them. And fast forward to my late 30s. It wasn't until my late 30s that I finally got diagnosed as being hypothyroid. And when I started taking meds for my hypothyroidism, my depression shifted so significantly. And I started doing more research and started learning more about it. And I found that hypothyroidism looks like depression for a lot of people. I mean, everyone has their own manifestation, but it's a complete mimic. And especially that up, down, up, down, up, down experience, the onset of hypothyroidism, especially if it's autoimmune in nature, you do, because it's an autoimmune thing, you might have periods where your thyroid's functioning better than other times, and you're going back and forth and back and forth. So a lot of people with Hashimoto's, as an example, get misdiagnosed as having bipolar depression. And so what I ultimately came to realize was that sort of what I had attributed to the onset of puberty being this hormonal surge that then had sort of sparked my depression, I now think, while it might have been puberty was involved, right, the change of sex hormones can affect your thyroid as well, that it was actually the thyroid was really the linchpin. Mm. And when I got diagnosed in my late 30s, the doctor was like, you've had this for decades. She could tell, like, the, you know, when I went back, I was like, when I was a early teenager, I lost 50% of my hair. And she was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty clear cut example of something that happens to people with hypothyroidism. It's just that it then didn't get diagnosed for several decades. And yeah, so I, you know, I'm now learning all these things about my past and having a new frame on it. And then the other thing I will say is, you know, because it's important, getting my diet in check was also a big part of me feeling better in terms of my hormonal system working better, getting off the blood sugar roller coaster, also rewriting the thoughts in my head around binge eating was a big thing, right? Because it becomes this snake that eats itself, like which came first. And so everything needed to be questioned, evaluated, and changed. But ultimately, long story short, I had misdiagnosed depression that was hypothyroidism. Now, I'm not saying I didn't also have depression, because depression is both clinical and situational. And so it gets murky, right? But definitely, I believe if I had been diagnosed as hypothyroid or having hypothyroidism when I was first showing symptoms, I have a strong belief that my depression course would have run very differently and had a very different effect and to a very different degree. I'm not saying, because I can't say, that it would never have been an issue, period. But I can see places where life would have turned out very differently.
Yes, I think it's very interesting. And you play that back and forth, don't you?
Right.
Looking back with the benefits of hindsight and wondering how things would have gone. And the diagnosis gets tricky as well, doesn't it? Because unless they use the right testing, of course,
right,
especially if you're in the autoimmune area,
right,
you might not get diagnosed properly in the first place. But I think you were diagnosed and put on the, what I would call the right treatment. You weren't just put on T4 from the get-go.
Right.
So that's one of the things that happened with me, although I was diagnosed back in my 20s, but spent best part of 20 years on T4 alone. And it was when I was re-diagnosed in France and they diagnosed the Hashimoto's and changed the medication to include T3 that I felt a bit better.
Right.
So I think I felt a bit like I was in this limbo state where it didn't get as bad as yours did, because I was getting some kind of treatment, but it wasn't quite the right treatment for me. And I noticed a shift then. But you were put on the right treatment from the get-go, is that right?
Yeah, it took a good year to dial in the right dose, and I changed medicines a few times. And so to anyone out there who thinks they might have a thyroid problem, it's an art to get your dosage dialed in properly, and one that always needs paying attention to, because it can shift. But yeah, I had a really good doctor initially diagnose me, and so I'm really glad for that. She was like, you know, I was already kind of on the spectrum of low carb, was on my radar at that point, but I hadn't, you know, I wasn't keto yet. And I wasn't really consistent with low carb even. And she was like, you definitely have hypothyroidism. It appears to be autoimmune in nature, but I have a case that's a little murky, whether it's Hashimoto's or not. But her opinion was that some people, even with Hashimoto's, don't show up 100% clearly on antibody tests, especially in certain circumstances. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's really about managing what's going on. But she was great and was like, you know, I'm not giving you traditional. I'm going to give you a little of this and a little of that. She mixed different medicines. We did compounding for a while. She also was like, no more grains, no more high carb. You know, she wasn't requiring keto or anything, but she definitely was more ancestral diet kind of focused. Mm-hmm. She felt like that was very important for people with thyroid issues. So it was a really good change, I'll just say, on that. What I found out, not until fairly recently working with Dr. Ken Berry on projects, was there is this medical classification called diagnoses of exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
What this means is there are some conditions that there's no test for, right? So if you think about it, like, you can test somebody to see if they have the antibodies to a certain type of disease, or if somebody has cancer, you can detect the cancer, right? So you can do a direct diagnosis. But there are certain conditions where there is no direct test. Mm. There's no blood test. There's no any
test. It's
just
what you're left with when you've ruled all these other things out.
Right. So you have to actually exclude all the other things that mimic the similar symptoms to legitimately diagnose these conditions. And depression is one of these diagnoses. So what I learned from Ken, from Dr. Berry, was before someone is diagnosed with depression and treated for depression, they're supposed to rule out like 20 other conditions that can look like depression, one of which is hypothyroidism. And no doctors do that.
No.
You're sad, you're depressed. Okay, case closed.
Mm, here's some tablets, usually.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know until I listened to that, but it's so obvious that yes, it should be one of these conditions that is only diagnosed in this way.
Right.
You know, I know of other things like fibromyalgia, things like that.
Yeah, that's on that list too, right?
I didn't realize depression was on that list, but of course it should be. Of course it should be.
Because
right. anything really that you can't do some right. kind of easy
it,
diagnosis
smell it, taste
for
it,
no
you know yeah
it's really difficult to grab hold of, isn't it? So
yeah.
it's obvious really, but that's not the way it works.
No,
for most doctors anyway.
And so, you know, ultimately it feels very important to me now that people understand that if you are somebody that struggles with depression, there's no other way to say that, is there? It's like that phrase is locked in my head, struggles with depression. Mm. Like there's no not struggling with depression. make sure that you have had all of the conditions that it might otherwise be excluded. And in my case, that's not to say that you wouldn't have some degree of depression in your life, even if everything else is excluded or if everything is included. And then the other thing that's a bit of a mind F, if you will, is our brain develops pathways. And so if we spend 20 years depressed, did we give ourselves depression?
That's what messes right? with like, my mind. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It messes with your head. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's sort of like, I know this is a funny case, but, you know, there's this, I'm going to get it totally wrong, but some child was like abandoned in the woods. This is apparently a true story at some point. It was old enough that they weren't like an infant. They were mobile and they ended up like hanging out with a pack of wolves for a while and like never learned to talk. Their only socialization was dogs and wolves. I guess a wolf is not a dog, but like canine. And now that they've kind of been tried to reintroduce into society later in life, they couldn't. They were like lacking the right language pathways. All these things had been set in place in pivotal developmental locations that you can't go backwards. You can't reset your brain. You have to just move forward from where you are.
And of course you can retrain your brain.
Sure.
You know, the whole neuroplasticity thing. But yeah, you can't just completely overwrite it. You can't just reset it. You can't just start again.
Yeah, you can't go back to factory settings.
No. Yeah, just hit the default button. Right. You can't do it. That's what fascinates me, thinking through that. Which came first? Would I still have depression if the thyroid had been found earlier, if it had been treated properly from the get-go? It's so interesting, and who knows?
Right. And, you know, I mean, everything would be different. Like, you know, what I think is so fascinating about just being a person, right? Now, what if my fix it to my depression wasn't binge eating? What if it was obsessive exercising, right? Mm. Then the rest of my life would also look different. Mm. What if my, you know, it's like we make choices, they set up a progression, we go from there. You can't, it's a fool's game to try and wish things didn't happen. It's very normal, but like, I don't waste a lot of time. Well, except when I talk to people on podcasts and like, I'm like, what if? And like, it's interesting to talk about.
No, it's an interesting discussion. It's not, it no, is, you're absolutely but, right. It's not like
but
a
when I'm by myself, I
about.
Don't spend a lot of time in regret same. Because it's a useless mm-hmm. thing. You got to go from where you are. And part of what makes me a good coach is that I dealt with stuff. Mm. It's like people do because their pictures are pretty, but like if you see someone who's never had a weight problem and you go to them to help you with your weight problem, I don't know that that person is the right person to help you because they've never struggled.
I agree.
If I hadn't struggled, I wouldn't know a lot of what I know.
No, you often talk about that. It's when things are going wrong or when you're struggling with something, that's when you dig in and you learn about it, and that not only helps you get through it, but it helps you help other people.
Right. You got to find the silver lining on these things or else you're just going to jump out your window.
Yeah, there's that.
So, you know, I think you have a similar story, right? In some ways, in that, how did your depression shift when you finally got your thyroid dialed in?
Well, that's where it was weird because I did have a relatively early diagnosis. So they actually both came at not far apart, I think, in my late 20s. I can't remember why. I think the thyroid question came up because I was gaining a lot of weight. Mm. And because I can remember the doctor saying to me, well, we'll test your thyroid. If it's a thyroid issue that's causing your weight gain, when we fix the thyroid, the weight will just fall off. And of course it didn't. But their solution to fixing it was just giving me T4. And so I spent the next, 20 years on T4. And it was only when it was tested again in France. Actually, it was when I'd started reading about it, saw the Stop the Thyroid Madness website and started reading about it and thinking, well, this all sounds a bit familiar. And I asked my doctor to test free T3 especially, but all the other things. And that was when they discovered I had Hashimoto's and we started mixing. It was a synthetic combination of T4 and T3. And I did start feeling a bit better. And keto made a huge difference to me. Before that, actually, the bariatric surgery made a big difference to my mood. I think actually with hindsight, I was probably in ketosis. I think it was probably ketones that was picking up my mood. And so I definitely saw a big shift in those early days of keto. I saw a big shift in my mood. And that's something that I struggle with a bit when you think, I fixed it. I feel better. This is it. This is the end of a depression. And when it starts creeping back, you feel a bit of a failure, or you feel let down. You've spoken before about this, about feeling let down by keto.
Like I thought I fixed it and I was wrong.
Yeah. A good way to describe it is it's just really murky. It's really complicated. There's no easy fix. And who knows what came first and what influenced what. But I think it's just such an important story to tell and to rule out, especially if you can catch it early on. So, you know, if you're seeing young people struggling, get them tested just to rule that out from the get-go.
Yeah. And the other thing I will bring up is, especially in the case of Hashimoto's or a person who is just developing hypothyroidism, you can initially have day-to-day thyroid fluctuations. So if you get your blood test on a Wednesday, your numbers might look normal, but on a Thursday, they would look wonky. And so even if you get one test that says, it looks fine, what's going on here? You know, be persistent. In most places in the United States, you can order your own set of tests to do kind of maybe a series. I'm not saying keep beating a dead horse, but if you're pretty sure you have these symptoms, if you are pretty sure this is an issue, don't let somebody just give you a TSH reading and say you're fine.
Mm. And keto definitely helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, my antibody numbers have improved since being on keto, for sure.
Yeah, and I see that over and over again. You know, Nisha Salisbury, it has hypothyroidism, and her on her ketovore, which is basically a very low vegetable keto, basically, she is what I would call like in remission, in that her antibodies are very, very, very low as well. You know, so we see that over and over again.
Yeah, I guess with a lot of things, if you're catching it early enough,
Yeah. You
have that potential to be able to reverse it, heal it, however you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been described in many, many ways. You know, I think this was kidney damage was described as this way, but it's a very good analogy for a lot of these health problems. If you understand something about cars, which I don't really, but it's like, you know, if you're driving your car and I don't even think they make cars this way anymore. So this analogy is getting even worse.
It's very outdated.
There's like
an analogy
a belt
that we know nothing about.
Right. There's a belt in your car. Like, you know, you turn the ignition and this belt starts running.
Oh, no, the fan belt. Yeah, that's
the fan.
Yeah, we still have those.
Okay. So, you know, this belt is running. And if that belt is very, very worn and you go into the shop and they replace it and they're like, that belt was about to break, you're good as new.
Mm.
There's no problem. It's just a belt. But if you're driving your car and that belt breaks while your car is running, that belt will whip around inside your engine and just destroy things. And then you can't fix that. Mm. You can't just, I replaced the belt. Well, but there's like this collateral damage that's caused by letting that run amok.
Mm.
I think a lot of health things are like that, where if you catch something early while it's still a fairly isolated incident, you haven't had a lot of downstream effects. You haven't had the body make a lot of like adjustments to try and deal with this problem. You know, the sooner you deal with something, the less long-term damage in general you're going to suffer. But if you let something go unchecked for decades, it's clear you're going to have a lot of compensatory behaviors, other health things that start to fall apart because they're trying to hold up the world and something essential is not working. And you're going to just reach points where you can't turn back the clock. You can't fix the belt. You need a new engine. You know, everything gets harder and harder the longer these problems persist without being taken care of.
Mm. And it is often difficult to find a doctor to help.
Yeah.
But I would just like to say that you might not get it perfectly right, but you can muddle along to a certain extent on your own, because that's what I'm having to do.
Right. Because you moved recently, right?
Yes. And it turns out in the UK that they refuse to test free T3. And I understand why, because they will only prescribe T4. So, you know, actually, what's the point really in testing free T3 if you're not going to prescribe any T3 into the mix to help people? So, yeah, I'm just trying to figure it out on my own with fairly regular testing.
Yeah.
And well, you can't even really call it a medication. It's just called a supplement, but it's the natural thyroid mix,
right.
Natural desiccated thyroid mix, basically. And I'm just kind of muddling through on my own.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are in that boat. You know, in your case, it's especially challenging. It's not just a state, it's the country. Although you are as close to some other countries as many people in states are here in the United States. But it's also lockdown-ish still. And so, like, options are very limited. And then, yeah, it's rough to try and handle this when you don't have the medical support, because it's a medical problem.
Yes. And so it just becomes
a relatively costly problem, basically. Yeah. I have to pay to test, and I have found somewhere, and I will add links for anyone that's in the UK, and you can give me some links for the US, and
sure,
we'll add what we can. But yeah, a finger prick type test. Mm. And, you know, I pay for that, and then I pay for the natural desiccated thyroid. So it is possible to do something about it, but it costs you money.
They have like holistic pharmacist kind of situation that you can get some T3 desiccated from?
Yeah, it's an online NDT place. I get it from, yeah, but it's a supplement. It's listed just as a supplement.
Right, they don't consider it a medication.
No.
That's challenging.
So it's, to a certain extent, it's not regulated in the same way that it, well, it's not regulated at all, like it is in the States. So I assume there's going to be some variability and things like that, which adds complications.
Anxious.
But, you know, but I definitely feel better on it than on the synthetics. So it must be working.
Right. Well, and that's the, you know, real barometer is how do you feel? Yeah, in the United States, a lot of people really struggle. And in Canada, I'll say it, I don't find it dissimilar in that if your doctor won't test something, how do you get it tested? And the problem is even in the state, in parts of the states, like most states, I think 45 out of 50, maybe 46 out of 50, you can get any lab test you want run if you'll pay for it. Mm-hmm. Using a service, like an online service. You can't just walk into the lab. You have to pre-order them through a service. But if it shows that you need to be treated, you can't treat yourself. So you still need a doctor in the mix. So it's super challenging to deal with a health issue when you feel like you don't have the support from a healthcare provider.
Mm. So that's really the key, isn't it, to try and get a doctor on board?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, if you're willing, just like you found, right? If you're willing to pay enough, you can find somebody to help you. Mm. There are a ton of online doctors who are open to alternatives and natural desiccateds and all that kind of stuff, but they're not inexpensive and your insurance will not pay them. So, you know, I feel the worse for people who live on limited budgets. You know, maybe they're on Medicare or Medicaid, you know, which I don't know if you're familiar with those, but in the United States, those mm-hmm. are sort of the state-run or maybe country-run programs that pay for medical care. And they certainly won't be paying for these things. And so it's a real challenge.
Yeah. And I'm very much on the budget option.
Yeah.
There are naturopaths here that I could go to for hundreds and hundreds of pounds an hour. And I think they can prescribe probably a synthetic mix. But yes, hugely expensive.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, it's not possible. And fortunately, I know enough about it to be able to kind of muddle through on my own. But yeah, it's very difficult. It's definitely a challenge. I guess this reminding people that it really has to be a diagnosis of exclusion. That's, I think that's the most important takeaway with depression, because yes, thyroid is one of the things on the list, but there are other things as well.
So many. There are several things that could be going wonky that's causing symptoms that mimic depression. And depression is a funky thing, right? In that depression is both a diagnosis, right? You can have depression, but it's also a symptom and an expression. I am depressed is a feeling. Mm. I have depression is a condition. And so many people experience periods of depression that are unrelated to having long-term ongoing depression. Like if you are grieving, if you get bad news, if you're under enough stress, you know, a lot of things can cause your affect to become depressed.
That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can usually attribute a reason for it.
Right.
I am feeling depressed because
I lost my job. I'm a little depressed, right? Mm. You know, all sorts of things. So you can, but when it's just there, it just showed up, that is a harder one.
And really, that should be a huge red flag
for
doctors, quite frankly, shouldn't it?
Right.
If, you know, if depression has pretty well just come out of the blue, then there's a reason for it.
Right, right. And I don't honestly know, you know, would most people describe that have true depression where it wasn't, you know, related to something else, that it was like just by dribs and drabs, it got worse and worse and worse. And so, you know, you can't even tell when it started because it started when you were three. Or, you know, do people experience that I woke up one day and I couldn't stop crying? Mm. You know, what is the history?
And by the time you go to see someone about it, yeah. I mean, I can remember the doctor sent me to a psychiatrist and they talked to you. But again, with hindsight, you can see them looking for situational mm-hmm. reasons mm-hmm. before they prescribe you Prozac.
Right, right.
Which is what happened with me. Yeah, I mean, I was on Prozac for 20 years and it never really helped.
Yeah.
And again, it's something that I know that it actually has limited capacity with helping people anyway. But yeah, probably, of course, it didn't help.
Right. And then that's the mind confusion too, right? It's like, well, meds didn't help me either. Depression or bipolar meds didn't help me, neither one, except help me gain weight. So is that diagnostic in a way? Well, not really, because they found that psych meds only help a fraction of the people. But then the second layer of mind twist is that because those people are misdiagnosed?
Yeah.
Is it not helping? Is it only helping 25% of people because 75% of people weren't? It's this endless loop of questions. But I think, you know, ultimately just keeps coming back to there is a list of things that your doctor needs to rule out before you confirm depression as a diagnosis. Mm. I mean, we can absolutely confirm that you are depressed,
yeah.
But is the cause simply your brain biochemistry, or is there an upstream cause affecting that?
Yes. And I think when you've ruled out that it's just a temporary situational depression and you've got the clinical depression diagnosis, yeah, should be looking at all these potential other underlying causes for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, there are some great people in the world of psychology and keto and low carb and nutrition and psychology altogether, like Georgia Ead, Dr. Georgia mm-hmm. Ead, Dr. Chris Palmer. And so those are great people to look at, you know, what they're putting out there in the world. So, I mean, it's multifaceted. One, I think keto can absolutely help people who have clinical depression. For a variety of reasons. It can also help people who simply feel depressed for a variety of reasons. It can help a bunch of conditions, right? So there's no one right solution for complex health problems. It's usually a matrix of solutions.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at keto overall as basically being an anti-inflammatory diet,
right?
There's a myriad of things that inflammation impacts that it's going to help, isn't it?
Yes. And that's only one, though. Then there's the other, you know, aspect where, you know, keto cleans up your blood sugar issues, and having roller coaster blood sugar can be a trigger for mood disturbance. So there's inflammation on one hand, then there's the blood sugar issue on the other hand. Then there's the evidence that one of the things that they find is there's a connection between treatments that help epilepsy and treatments that help depression, or especially bipolar, I should say, because a lot of the drugs that they prescribe people who are bipolar are epilepsy drugs. Hmm. I was on an epilepsy drug for a while because they were like, well, if you're bipolar, maybe this will help. And so if it's true that drugs that help epilepsy also help a lot of people with bipolar, it would make sense that a lifestyle change that helps epilepsy might also help people who are bipolar.
Absolutely.
And so there are all these little tendrils of interesting things about the ketogenic diet that may be beneficial separately from each other and in conjunction with each other.
Mm. It's so interesting. And I think that's a great way to describe it. All these tendrils, diet and lifestyle, that all the tendrils that reach everywhere that impact it. You know, such a long list.
Well, and then there's sleep, also simply the fact that a lot of people with long-term depression, one of the things that's a big trigger and sort of cyclical is their feeling of a lack of agency. They feel useless. They feel helpless. They feel unable to affect change in their life. And when you are able to change the way you eat and you're able to see a change in your body, you have positive feedback for what might feel like the first time ever about something you did and a health result you got. And simply that hopefulness can buoy the spirits in a way that can suppress some of the depressive, reactive thoughts.
Definitely. I think that's one of the biggest things, actually, for me from keto is that sense of empowerment.
Yeah.
And what I love to see in other people.
Absolutely.
Especially women, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? A lot of people who don't really understand long-term weight issue people will be like, well, of course you feel happier, you're thinner. And it's like, it's so much deeper than that.
So much.
Because when I went from, you know, almost 300 pounds to 250, I felt so much better. I was objectively not that thin in society. And no one who didn't know where I came from would have been like, well, look at you. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like, it wasn't really that I felt like I was thin, but it was that I did something and something happened that was, I wanted to happen. And that completely changes your perspective on the world.
While also actually tasting pretty good. That's always been the thing for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been thinking a lot recently about like why keto, because now 5 years later, I can actually lose weight with a variety of approaches. It doesn't even have to be keto. Mm. But when I started keto, keto was the only thing I could actually make work, both physiologically and mentally. And I think a large part of that was how satiating it was, how delicious the food was. It just was like a lock and key for me that really worked, that I know I wouldn't have made the progress I had if I just tried to do some rando approach, because I tried a lot of rando approaches and they all failed.
Exactly. It's always felt like the antithesis of diets to me.
Yeah.
Just from the tasty perspective.
I think that it's, you know, it gets a little everything is murky, you know, but it definitely can be undertaken like a diet. But I really think that there is some significant benefit to a period of time transitioning to keto where you're simply focused on a complete perspective shift around your relationship with food and getting acquainted with how food affects your body, your mood, how your body functions, like all of that. The problem is a lot of times when people go to keto, they're very much in the diet mindset and it's very hard for them to let go of that. And so I feel like the process can often get thwarted in a way with the diet mentality. And I think that can stall some, not people's scale progress, but can stall their long-term mental shift that they might want to make.
No, I agree. And as you've said, you know, you can come back to actually adopting some of the advantages from that mentality later when you feel in a better frame of mind and you want to, you know, you want to apply some of those to have some periods of weight loss. We could end up going down.
We go all sorts of places. Yeah. And that's not what we're talking about today. But yeah,
that's
but ultimately, I do think that in terms of mental health, in terms of thyroid health, in terms of hormonal health, treating keto too much like a diet and not enough like a health intervention can be counterproductive.
No, I absolutely agree. Okay, well, I think that's been a very interesting, if rambly, but I like rambly conversations.
Yeah, well, you and me, both a little rambly.
Yeah.
I'm total 80. I've learned as an I wasn't diagnosed until, well, I've self-diagnosed, I should say. I definitely have ADHD. Once I found out that it often presents in women as distracted, not hyper, I was like, oh, that's me to a T. And so I've learned that my issues are many.
Oh, interesting. That sounds very familiar. Also, I shall have to talk to you about that another time. I am certainly distracted.
Of course, right now it's very popular. Name. Everyone thinks they have ADHD now. So, you know, it's one of those things. Anyway. Yeah. All right.
Well, Kim, you know how we end.
Yes, and yet I never prepare.
And you never remember, but you always come up with good top tips on the hoof. So can we have from you, please, a top tip?
Well, I guess I really want to drive home what we talked about on the show today, which is if you were ever diagnosed with depression without your doctor running a very complete blood panel, that included a complete panel of thyroid tests, you were improperly diagnosed. That does not mean that you don't have depression. It simply means you might also, or alternatively, have something else. But end of day, full stop, no question means you were inappropriately diagnosed. And you should seek out a proper diagnosis.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for sharing some of your time with me. It has been a great pleasure as always, Kim. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for staying with me right to the end. I do hope you enjoyed that. You see what I mean now, that it's a really important story to share. How many people out there have been misdiagnosed with depression, or at least inadequately diagnosed, by missing out some other things that are at the very least a contributory factor to that depression? I certainly count myself as one of those, and obviously Kim is too. But how many more people are there out there? And as is so often the case, I think especially women. Underactive thyroid, hypothyroidism is something that I mention so often to people if they're struggling. It's just something that is worth ruling out. If nothing else, rule it out. And I always refer people to the Stop the Thyroid Madness website because it is so informative. There's all sorts of information there. They also have a very good book, which is where I started actually, and then went on to the website. But there's a couple of books, and the first one in particular is very good, packed with all sorts of information. And it just gives you the information and advice you need to hopefully start driving your own diagnosis and treatment. That's certainly what happened with me. You'll have heard me talk about it before. I was very lucky to have a great doctor in France who was happy to work with me with testing and then with altering the medication that I was taking. Unfortunately, it's not so easy here in the UK, but at least I've learned a lot along the way, so I can reasonably manage my own treatment now. It's not ideal, but it's better than nothing. So if you're struggling, that really is a very good place to start. www.stopthethyroidmadness.com. And basically, if you know something's wrong and you suspect that it's hypothyroidism, don't take no for an answer. Keep pushing. So on now to this week's end quote. Today, I've got a quote for you from Deepak Chopra. In the mere observation of yourself, you begin the process of healing and transformation. Until next time, please take very good care. I do hope you're heading into a lovely weekend, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.